A Katra podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to unpack big ideas and make them really accessible. Today, we're looking at a book that, well, it sort of questions our very human tendency to believe in magic.
That's right. We're diving into Richard Dawkins' 2011 book, The Magic of Reality, How We Know What's Really True. And our goal today isn't just, you know, reciting the science bits. It's more about exploring Dawkins' central idea, which is actually quite uplifting, I think. The argument that scientific reality, the stuff we can actually test and verify, is far more amazing, more complex, and, yeah, even more magical than any myth humans ever came up with.
And that feels incredibly relevant right now, doesn't it? I mean, just think about the sheer volume of information and sometimes misinformation that hits us every single day. This book gives you more than just cool facts about, say, the universe or evolution. It really offers a toolkit, the scientific method, to help you sort out what's real from what's just noise. It's about finding genuine wonder in what we can actually know.
Exactly. Finding awe in the verifiable.
Okay, so let's talk about our guide on this journey, Richard Dawkins. He's a pretty major figure, especially in evolutionary biology, born 1941, world-renowned biologist, etheritist.
Right. But what makes him, I think, particularly suited to this specific book isn't just his scientific background, deep as it is. It's his dedication to communicating science. You know, he held that special professorship at Oxford, the Charles Simony Professorship for the Public Understanding of Science. That title alone tells you a lot. His whole career, really, has been about bridging that gap between the lab and, well, us, making complex ideas understandable.
And you can't really talk about him without mentioning The Selfish Gene from back in 76. That book just completely shifted how people thought about evolution, focusing everything on the gene itself. That kind of deep, rigorous thinking underpins everything else he argues.
Absolutely. That's the foundation. His unique angle comes from mixing that hardcore scientific expertise with, frankly, exceptional communication skills. Decades spent explaining, debating, debunking pseudoscience. And importantly, making these big ideas accessible, especially to younger people, though it really speaks to anyone curious. He's insistent that critical thinking and wonder aren't opposites. They actually fuel each other.
I love that. The idea that understanding doesn't kill the magic, it enhances it. So let's get into the magic of reality itself. What's the quick version, the core message?
The simplest way to put it, it's the ultimate reality check. The main idea is that reality, when you look at it through the lens of evidence and reason, is just fundamentally more beautiful, more intricate than anything we could have possibly invented in myths or stories. It's really a book-long argument that truth itself is where the real wonder lies.
And the way he structures it is, well, quite clever. He takes on those huge questions humans have always wrestled with, right? Like, where did everything come from? Or a really tough one, why do bad things happen?
Precisely. He tackles these biggies head on. And for each one, he contrasts two kinds of answers. First, you've got the myths, the gods, the spirits, the legends. He doesn't just brush them off either. He gives them their due, acknowledges their cultural weight, their poetic value. They were humanity's first attempts, noble attempts, to make sense of it all.
But then, crucially, he lays out the scientific explanations, and he shows why they're, well, better answers. Not just because you can test them, which is key, but because they let us predict things, build knowledge, and ultimately, the picture science paints of the universe is just bigger, grander, more awe-inspiring than the myths, really.
It's quite ambitious in scope. It's aimed broadly, maybe starting with young adults, but it treats every reader intelligently. You get cosmology, evolution, genetics, physics, chemistry, geology. It's like a whole worldview primer.
Okay, let's dig into some specific examples because that's where the argument really comes alive. He starts chapter 2 with a question that sounds simple but is actually profound. Who was the first person?
Yeah, and what's so neat is that the scientific answer basically says that's the wrong question. There wasn't a first human. It wasn't like a switch flipped. Evolution is this incredibly slow, gradual unfolding over vast stretches of time. We like neat categories, but nature works in shades of gray, you know.
It's hard to picture that kind of time scale, millions of years. How does he help us visualize it?
He uses this brilliant analogy. Imagine a photo album, a ridiculously huge one, with pictures of every single ancestor you have going back and back and back. If you just look from one photo to the next, your parent, your grandparent, the change is basically zero.
Yeah.
You absolutely cannot point to one picture and say, aha, that's the first Homo sapiens.
And here's the mind blower.
Exactly. But if you flip way, way back, he uses the number 185 million generations Just as an example, the ancestor in that photo would look, well, like a fish.
Mm.
It shows how tiny changes accumulate over immense time. It connects us to everything. That time scale itself is, you know, part of the magic.
Sticking with time and scale, let's look up. Chapter 5 asks, why do we have night and day, winter and summer? We all know the old stories, right? Helios and his sun chariot, that sort of thing.
Lovely stories, but compare them to the, well, the mechanical reality.
Yeah.
Which is just cooler, I think. Night and day. Simple. The Earth spins on its axis. We're just rotating into sunlight, then out of it.
And the seasons, people still get this wrong sometimes. It's not that we get closer or farther from the sun in our orbit.
No, not really. The orbit's nearly circular. It's all about the tilt. The Earth's axis isn't straight up and down relative to its orbit. It's tilted by about 23.5 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So as we go around the sun, sometimes the northern hemisphere leans towards the sun. That's our summer. Sometimes it leans away. That's winter. The elegant cosmic clockwork. Understanding that feels way more profound than imagining a god driving a chariot, doesn't it?
It really does. Okay, back to biology, chapter 3. Why are there so many different types of animals? This gets to the heart of biodiversity and natural selection.
And again, he makes it relatable. He starts with something we did.
Oh.
Artificial selection. Think about dogs. Humans started with wolves, and by choosing which ones to breed over generations, selecting for friendliness or size or speed, we ended up with everything from a Great Dane to a poodle. We were the selectors.
So in nature...
In nature, the environment does the selecting. Unintentionally, of course. It's about survival and reproduction. Which variations give an organism a slight edge in its specific environment? Those organisms are more likely to survive, have offspring, and pass on those advantageous traits. Repeat that process over millions and millions of years in countless different environments, and boom, you get the incredible diversity of life we see.
Like Darwin's finches on the Galapagos.
Perfect example. Different beak shapes evolving on different islands, perfectly suited to the available food sources. It shows divergence and adaptation driven by environmental pressure. Natural selection explains it all without needing a designer.
All right, this next one is maybe the toughest, emotionally, chapter 11. Why do bad things happen? When awful things occur, earthquakes, diseases, people often look for meaning, right? Divine punishment, karma, tests of faith. What's Dawkins' alternative?
It's dark, perhaps, but also incredibly powerful. He offers understanding. He directly rejects any supernatural explanation for suffering. Earthquakes happen because tectonic plates shift. Diseases happen because of pathogens or genetic mutations. Tsunamis follow the laws of physics. They're impersonal.
That's a huge mental shift. It means there's no purpose behind the suffering, no one to blame in a cosmic sense.
Exactly. And the key insight, the empowering part, is what this perspective allows. If we know the causes are natural, impersonal mechanisms, we can stop asking why me or assigning blame. Instead, we can focus our energy rationally, find scientific solutions better, building codes, vaccines, treatments, and critically, it fosters empathy and compassion for others caught up in these natural processes.
Okay, let's end this section with something beautiful.
Yeah.
Chapter 7, what is a rainbow? Forget the Bifrost Bridge myth for a second. What's the reality?
Elegant physics again. First, you need to know that sunlight, which looks white or yellowish, isn't just one color. It's actually a mix of all the colors of the spectrum blended together.
Like a prism reveals.
Precisely. And raindrops act like millions of tiny suspended prisms. When sunlight enters a raindrop, the light bends, that's refraction, and different colors bend by slightly different amounts, splitting the white light apart. Then the light reflects off the inside back of the raindrop and exits, bending again. Because each color bends differently, they emerge separated, forming that arc we see. Knowing how it happens, the physics and geometry, it doesn't make it less beautiful. I think it makes it more so.
Yeah, these examples really show how the book isn't just facts, it's a whole way of thinking. So if we zoom out, what are the big overarching themes holding this worldview together?
Well, the bedrock, the foundation for everything else, is definitely the superiority of evidence-based thinking. That's theme one. Dawkins is basically saying, look, the best way to understand the world is to base your beliefs on verifiable evidence. Observe, hypothesize, test, repeat.
And that's not just for scientists and labs, right? It's for everyday life. It's your filter for news headlines, health claims, political promises, even just ads trying to sell you something. You need that toolkit to ask, okay, where's the evidence?
Absolutely. Then the second big theme, and we've touched on this a lot, is the beauty and wonder of scientific discovery. He pushes back hard against the idea that science is somehow cold or spoils the fun. He argues passionately that knowing how something works, like the rainbow or the seasons, actually deepens your appreciation. That's where his phrase, the poetry of reality, comes from. Science reveals the intricate beauty.
It turns looking at the stars from just seeing pretty lights into thinking about nuclear fusion and cosmic distances, active appreciation.
Exactly. And theme three is the interconnectedness of all life. By grounding everything in evolution and common ancestry backed up by DNA, fossils, he reminds us, we're related, not just to other humans, but to every living thing. That fosters, or should foster, a sense of kinship, a connection to the whole biosphere. And naturally, that leads to thinking about our responsibility towards it.
The book is also just packed with really memorable phrases, lines that stick with you because they capture these big ideas so well.
He really does have a way with words. Let's pick out maybe three key quotes or ideas. The first one basically sums up the whole book, reclaiming that word magic. The magic of reality is neither supernatural nor a trick, but quite simply wonderful, wonderful, and real. Wonderful because real.
That just perfectly frames it. Real awe comes from reality itself.
Then there's a line that's quite profound, maybe a bit challenging, about existence. We are going to die, and that makes us the lucky ones. Most people are never going to die because they are never going to be born.
Whoa. That puts things in perspective. It really highlights how incredibly unlikely our individual existence is. All the things that had to happen, all the potential people who never were. It makes you appreciate this brief chance we have.
Right. It's an argument for cherishing life based on its sheer improbability. And the third one, we mentioned it, but it's worth repeating. Science is the poetry of reality. It's just such an elegant way to say that understanding enhances rather than destroys beauty and wonder.
So taking all this in this evidence-based, wonder-filled view, how do we actually use it? What are the practical applications for you listening right now?
I think the most obvious one is it supercharges your critical thinking. You really do develop that internal baloney detection kit, as Carl Sagan called it. When you see some wild claim online or a miracle cure advertised, you automatically start asking better questions. What's the source? Is there actual evidence? Can this be tested? It helps you navigate the information chaos much more effectively.
Yeah, that's huge. And second,
enhanced appreciation. Genuinely understanding a bit about, say, how stars work through nuclear fusion or the immense timescale of geology. It just transforms how you experience the world. A starry night isn't just pretty anymore. It's profoundly moving when you grasp the scale and the physics involved.
It makes the mundane magnificent.
It really does. And thirdly, I think it builds resilience. Remember chapter 11 on why bad things happen? Accepting that often misfortune stems from impersonal natural laws, not malice or fate. It can be oddly comforting. It helps shift your focus from why is this happening to me towards practical problem solving, seeking help, and having compassion for others facing similar impersonal forces. It's a surprisingly effective coping mechanism.
So wrapping up, for me, the biggest takeaway is this powerful idea that truth itself is the deepest source of wonder. We don't need to invent magic. The universe, as it actually is far stranger, more complex, and ultimately more satisfying than any story we could make up. Embrace reality. It's amazing.
Well said. Mm-hmm. And for me, the lasting insight is the sheer empowerment that comes from really internalizing the scientific method. It's not just for scientists. It's the best tool we have for figuring things out, for protecting ourselves from being misled, and for unlocking the genuine awe and understanding how things work. It's the key, really.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.